I'm going to carry on from some of what Jill introduced at the beginning, and I'm going to continue on the implementation of the primary care home in Oregon with some very specific evaluation results and try to link this back to population health, and Adam, try to make some of the connection that you helped as well. None of us have any financial disclosures or other commercial interests there. We all do have relations to the Oregon Health Authority, either by virtue of employment, a practicum placement, or being hired as contractors, but I don't think that crosses the border for APHA. So we are, in this brief presentation, telling you actually some specific results that we have learned about the implementation of the primary care home model in Oregon, with particular emphasis on the accomplishment of the triple aim. And where I really want to make the emphasis, since we're at APHA, is the element of the triple aim, which is about improving the health of populations, as well as improving the health of individuals and decreasing the costs of care. So we'll share with you some of the results from our early implementation. Jill listed for you in the first presentation the six core attributes that we use in Oregon. One of the sites actually developed this picture, which is a really nice way of thinking about the primary care home, because it's a picture and it's a home. And at the center in the roof is that it's patient and family centered, and then all the other things around it. So we sort of keep that picture in our minds. It's important when we talk about what we're doing in Oregon as an example, that the practices, the kinds of organizations that can be recognized as patient-centered primary care homes and receive enhanced payment for services are all these different kinds. So think about all the people that these kinds of organizations would reach when you think about the whole population. And it's covering pretty widely individuals and organizations that are delivering primary care. To be recognized, though, they must meet the Oregon standards, and those are the Oregon standards. Those are not national standards. By August 2013, there were 425 practices recognized in Oregon. You can see that they're clustered in certain areas. Well, that's actually where the population is. There are some counties in Oregon where we think nobody lives. There are actually a few people who live in some of those counties, but this is where the practices are, and this parallels the geographic dispersion of population in Oregon. We conducted an implementation evaluation, which was to survey the recognized practices to provide the Oregon Health Authority with data that would supplement the information that practices were submitting in their recognition application. Our survey was based not only upon the existing governmentally approved standards, but also based upon anticipated enhancements that will go into place in 2014. So these were data that organizations were not providing, but the state already knew they wanted this supplemental information, so they asked us to do this work. We created a web-based survey that went to the practice contacts. The survey and protocols were approved by the IRB at Portland State University, where I work. And we conducted two surveys, one in October 2012, when there were 205 recognized practices, and then again in May of this year, by which time there were 368 recognized practices. You can see some basic data here. I'm not going to read it all to you. We got a terrific response rate on the first survey. By the second survey, we think we had a little bit of survey burden, as well as some practices being annoyed with the state because they weren't getting payment as fast as they wanted, so they were objecting to anything that the state asked of them. And so we didn't get quite as good a response, but still 69%. You can see the range of providers, the range of numbers of other clinical staff, the range in visits. These practices are all over the map. So there's an average, but there's this incredible dispersion. The majority of these practices serve adult and pediatric populations. They provide obstetrics care. And even though we're in Oregon on the left coast, less than 20% say that they're providing complementary and alternative medical services. Nearly half of them are owned by a larger system, which is going to be important in terms of their collaborations and some of their supports. 40% claim to be independent and unaffiliated. The remainder are independent but in alliances. So close to 60% have some sort of larger organization that helps them to move forward in the work that they are doing. We asked about access measures because these are considered really important in terms of the implementation of the health home or primary care home model. What's interesting with some of these is that the first bar, the sort of greenier bar, is survey one, the blue is survey two. The second group isn't necessarily doing better on all of the measures, and this is typical survey results that you don't know exactly how representative your group is of all of the practices, But it does give us some baseline information that said to the health authority in particular, if we think that office visit cycle time, which is the third bar from the left, is really important, this is clearly one we need to be working on more because not as many practices are doing that as compared to almost everybody was working on either third next available or tracking the percent of no-show appointments. So these data, rather than describing the practices well, really help to say where are the places where we can leverage and do more to improve. Accountability is one of the core measures, and what we saw is that all the practices nearly showed a strong commitment to performance improvement, probably because they had to in order to be recognized. So they say that they are using clinical quality data, they're using a structured improvement method, but in particular in terms of their populations, they have processes in place to identify individuals who are high utilizers of services and therefore could be a real target of opportunity. They use care management teams. And one of the most important findings was that participation in some sort of collaborative with like-minded practices was really key in learning new approaches and having the encouragement and permission to experiment with some of these organizational changes. In terms of comprehensive whole person care, again, they were sending out reminders for preventive services. They had in place ways to screen and identify individuals at risk for harmful health behaviors. From a public health perspective, this makes us feel really happy that all these primary care practices are thinking about these prevention-oriented activities. And over two-thirds reported close collaboration of physical and behavioral health providers who use common care plans. These are, remember, the ones who have already implemented and been recognized. So it raises a challenge for organizations that have not yet been recognized that this alliance of physical and behavioral health is really one of the most important measures in moving to the health home model. They did pretty well on coordination and integration. You can see the data here. I'm not going to read them all to you. At the time of these surveys, nearly 100% reported using electronic health records. It is not required to be recognized, but it's really hard for these practices to do what they need to do to be this really integrated health home if they don't have an EHR in place. And the use, again, of care management teams and guideline-based reminders to help these providers really think about a lot of these things that are related to prevention and promotion. One of the most interesting areas was around the use of interpretation and culturally responsive care, which comes under the attribute of person and family-centered care. Very few actually reported having on site providers who spoke the languages. They used interpreters, and they used phone interpreter services, but there was this huge deficit in terms of providers who actually had the competency in language. But they are training their staff in cultural competence, and they're training staff in patient communication. And in terms of person and family-centered care, the other important area was in terms of same-day appointments and ensuring that people can get in quickly and get services when they need it for whatever services they may need. So in terms of the implementation, we asked how many new services did you have to add in order to achieve recognition, wondering how big a leap was this to move into this program. 80% said they had to add at least one new service, but the great majority of those were about care management, care coordination, care management teams, tracking patients, and enhanced use of data. When we asked about the impact of PCPCH recognition, we focused in on the triple aim, which is at the core of this work. 85% of the practices say that they believe that they are improving the individual experience of care. 82% believe that they are improving population health management, which makes us say, so what about the other 18%? But only 48% said they really believe they're decreasing the cost of care. And we think this reveals the lack of information they really have about understanding the financial implications and what things really cost. But at the same time, again, the practices are annoyed that they're not getting the reimbursement that they had hoped to get. And so anything that relates to costs always sort of raises their eyebrows. We also asked, in addition, around triple aim related areas, are you improving the quality of care that you think that you're delivering to patients and their families? 85% said yes, which is quite impressive. This is self-report, however, but it's still impressive. 75% believe that they are increasing access to services. So what does this mean for improving the health of communities and the health of populations? It's clear that the role of primary care, the primary care home or the health home, as some people in public health like to talk about, is important not only in improving the individual's experience of care, but in moving towards improving population health and thinking about population health strategies. There is coordination at the individual access point, but this is embedded in larger systems level coordination. So linking this to some of what Jill talked about in terms of the coordinated care organizations is really part of the way forward in Oregon, and this balancing of these strategies around the health home and around the CCO, ACO kind of a model. It's clear that the opportunities for shared learning of promising practices and accelerating spread across primary health services was a major leverage opportunity. There had been a number of primary care collaboratives operating in Oregon for a number of years before this program was launched. So there were already seeds of change. There were early adopters who were ready to share their promising practices with others. And that was an investment of private money as well as public money and governmental resources. And there are some very clear rules, if you're thinking about how might this happen in your state, for various organizations. Our state primary care association, which at the time had 28 FQHC or FQHC lookalikes as members, was involved in one of the early collaboratives. Our local health department in the Portland Tri-County area, which delivers a lot of primary care services, was involved in one of the early collaboratives and could be a representative and could spearhead for others. Other quality collaboratives, associations, local health departments, lots of opportunities for organizations to collaborate, but also to leverage for this kind of improvement. And what's kind of remarkable when we step back and look at it is how fast this spread across our state. We're a relatively small state in terms of population, so it's relatively easy. We also have this culture of innovation around healthcare that's been going on since the mid-90s, and we like to brag about how we're such a leader in transformation, but it's really happening really, really fast with, as Jill said, an incredibly small staff who are just racing to keep up with it. The program was launched, the PCPCH program was launched October 2011. By the time we were conducting our first survey, less than a year later, there were 205 recognized practices. 8 months later, there were 368. Right now, well, last month, which was just recently, there were 450. There are new standards that will take effect on January 2014. And the state estimates that there are about another 400 to 500 practices that still could be recognized, but many of these are smaller, and so the challenges that they will face, we're not sure how many of those will actually come forward. But when you put that all together, you can say, wow, what's going to be the impact on population health for the entire population of the state of Oregon? The key lessons for other jurisdictions are that there was this burning platform that the state of Oregon had. The only option was to transform. What could we do in order to address issues of population health, individual experience of care, and costs? In Oregon, we like to collaborate. We're a very collaborative state, so there was a huge amount of public discussion and dialogue. But communities had to think beyond clinic and hospital walls in order to really work together to improve health. So there were a number of discussions that went on that took us outside of these organizations. The focus of our research is on organizations that deliver primary care, but the work that they're doing is embedded in this larger system of thinking about going beyond those walls. And the state was very strategic about building a vision where they kept validating and verifying their approach with national expertise and with other states' experience. And they worked across organizational boundaries. As Jill said, we had a split legislature at the time. They crossed agency silos. They worked between the legislative and executive branch leadership, and they worked very closely with HHS and CMS even before submitting the first waiver and with each subsequent waiver. What's interesting now is that the private insurers have been engaged as well as the public. So the initial plan was for all the publicly funded covered lives, and now some of the private insurers are coming in, and some of us who are public employees but are not necessarily on Medicaid, this year we have incentives to get our care through a recognized primary care home, and our insurance will be discounted. So this is a place to get more information, all of the standards, everything about the primary care home program is public there. You can look at either of those sites and also my contact information. Thank you very much.